a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
What's going on, everybody? This is Nate, as always. We have another weekly roundup. We wanted to wait until today so the World Pool Championships could be finished up. And this is going to be our discussion from that event. Today I'm going to be joined with Melina Mike, Jim Telfer, and Rob Hovick for your regular weekly show. But before we get into that, I wanted to get all of the announcements out of the way in the beginning. We have had another strong showing for the week of the Patreon, so I want to give a huge, huge, huge shout-out to Chris Henry. I think I got you last week, but I want to make sure. Greg Thornton, Carly McGee, Patrick Azar, and Horacio. I guess I don't really have access to anything else besides Horacio, so I think I know who you are. I think I've seen you around the podcast before, but I don't want to be an idiot and try to get your name wrong, so I'm just going to stick with that, and hopefully you're Spanish and not Italian, because if you're Italian, it'd be Horacio, I believe, but I don't know. We'll stop there. So thank you to Patrick, Carly, Greg, and Horacio for your guys' joining of the Patreon, and of course, not only is that going to be the biggest way that we're going to continue innovating in the years to come, but on top of that, that is going to get you entered in to a drawing to win a Propel Jump Cue, which you have about 20 days to still get entered in. So if you want to get into a drawing to win a free Propel Cue, as well as a Ginettely Cue Ball and a couple of McDermott packages, we are going to be giving those away very soon into July. And you still have any time from now until the start of July to join the Patreon and get yourself entered into those drawings, as well as really supporting the future of this podcast for as little as $5 a month. It's really the way that we are continuing to grow the podcast. So we really do appreciate you guys joining in and helping us out, as well as, you know, hopefully, potentially winning yourself a pretty cool prize. So with that out of the way, we can move on to the Moscone Cup. And if you are watching the World Pool Championships, you know that the Moscone Cup tickets are going to be going on sale very, very soon. They changed the dates for the Moscone Cup. It is now the 7th through the 10th. Shouldn't be a big issue. We have a big, big group of people going right now. I believe there are 27 people that have reserved tickets to go to the Moscone Cup in London as part of the Cue It Up Club, we're calling it. I'm calling it. I don't know. I just made that up right now on the spot, and it kind of sounds catchy. I don't know. That is going to involve Jim Telfer and myself, Jim's group and my group, as well as Nada Hoffman, who is organizing a lot of this. So thank you very much, Nada. I actually don't even know if you listen to the podcast. I don't think you do listen to the podcast, but if you do, you can reach out to me and yell at me for, I don't know, not knowing that you do follow the podcast. But we are putting together packages so that you can actually get your flight and your hotel booked through us, and it'll be much cheaper in doing so with our group rate. So I believe it's going to be about $750 about just in hotel and flights, but that should be the biggest bulk of what the costs are. So certainly I would think that you'd be able to get, if you lived frivolously, if you lived cheaply, we'll say, while you're over there, you should be able to get this trip in for, you know, about a 5 or 6 or 7 days in London for about $1,000, which is, I think that's pretty good. So let us know if you want to be part of that. Reach out to myself, Nate Mindham, or the podcast, Cue It Up Network, or we also created a group on Facebook so that we can start organizing all of these things together, and we can start making announcements and blah, 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 blah. So make sure to join that if you're interested in going. The group is Cue It Up Moscone Cup 2021. You could also just check out the Cue It Up Network Facebook page. I posted something about it there, and I also posted something to my personal page, Nate Mindham. So make sure to go over and check that out. If you're interested in going, please let us know. We will get you written down as one of the tickets, and hopefully we'll be seeing you in London as part of our group. We're hoping to have between 50 and 60 people in part of our group, so should be a big, loud cheering section. Hopefully you get plenty of TV time too, since we're going to have such a big group. Well, I'm sure they'll the cameras will love our group. Who knows? But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And with that announcement out of the way, I guess that's really all I have to clear up in the beginning. Thank you to all the Patreons who joined this week, and let me know if you want to go to the Moscone Cup. And other than that, we can get right into this interview that we did with Melina Mike, Jim Telfer, and Rob Hovick. Here it is.
Sure.
Shut up, Rob. Rob, are you starting to go like anti-bald? I'm starting to see like a couple like little featherings up there of like hair.
Oh, I mousse it.
Oh, you mousse it up?
Are you using that spray on stuff that you can get that makes your hair look thicker? Like that powder.
I think it's kind of cute, Rob. Well, you know, if I was 70 years older, I might come at you.
I have these age spots on the top of my head. See, when you get old, you get these brown spots. They call them age spots. And well, the rest of my head can tan to catch up to that. Then you don't see the age spots.
Jim, you and Rob are about the same age. Do you have those?
Wow. Wow. I'm not even going to react to that.
Well, in case you couldn't tell, we are joined here by Mr. Jim Telfer. What's up, Jim?
How you doing, everybody? Good to be here.
And Rob Hovick. What's up, Rob?
This nice is where to you see say you, hi. Jim.
You too, Rob.
Hope and nice to well. See you too, Nate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was waiting for that,
I've
Rob.
I don't know about that.
I'll stop.
Actually, after I had proliferation therapy done on my neck and back, I just went golfing yesterday morning and I feel no pain. I played 3 hours on the billiard table. And I'm in great shape. That prolotherapy, I'll tell you what, it's a real deal.
Well,
yeah, I've just gotten over some back and some neck issues. I don't know what it was, a trapped nerve or some of that I had in my shoulder or my neck for a couple of weeks, and I just got over it. So I'm just glad to be playing again. It's great.
It's about time you stop whining.
Right.
And I'm not sure if he's ready to talk yet, but there's what's up, Mike? How's it going?
Yo, sorry.
Look
boys,
at those flashy sunglasses.
Whoa. Future's so bright, gotta be a shade.
No, not quite. It's been a long morning. We've been on the road since 5 o'clock in the morning. How you guys doing?
Where are you right now, Mike?
5 o'clock in the morning. Ugh.
Where are you there?
Yeah, I'm in Austin right now. I'm at James Hanshoe's place. I don't know if you know Hanshoe, but he makes jump cues.
Okay. Yeah.
Cues, so I came here to help him out for, I come out here about once a week, every month, and then we'll knock some stuff out and earn some extra money. So it's good. But I'm excited to talk world championships, man. It's been a great event.
Yeah. I got this super cryptic message from you saying, hey, we need to talk some World Cup of Pool. And then I never got a response out of that. I'm like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah. I was jonesing to do something. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, here we are. Well, why don't we get started? I guess we got all the niceties out of the way, as close as Rob and Jim and I can get to niceties. So that's effective. Mike, you just joined us. Why don't you start us off? What did you think? Overall view of the event?
I mean, the overall, I think it gives a lot of hope and a lot of promise. I think, the setup and the way and the format I really enjoyed, race to 9 and then raising it up to what was it, race to 11, I think, in the final 16, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was great. The shot clock, I think, went well. The flow of the tournament felt good. I'm excited to whenever the other guys from Asia show up and really give, really make it a world event, you know. But all things considered, I'm very optimistic and very hopeful, man. Excited too.
Jim, what do you got?
Well, yeah, to be honest, when you compare it to the world championships that we've had for the last 10 years, I could have hosted one in my own room here and it would have been better than those ones as far as what was put out for fans. In any case, I know the players didn't really enjoy going down there. I thought it was a big hit. I really enjoyed it. I think that's like the fourth event that they've had in quick succession. I think they've learned from mistakes through the previous events. Some of it's been a little bit of just sort of playing around with it and trying some new stuff out, which I like. You know, I like that they try new things out. I thought it was great. I have to say, I thought it was, you know, there's a couple of issues that I guess we'll probably talk about over the next 20 minutes or so. But I thought as an event in the World Championships, I'm just delighted that we actually have a World Championships now that is kind of worthy of our sport. And I enjoyed the format as well. I thought it was good. The race lengths were nice. I really loved the arena. I loved the fact that you could hear the other tables a little bit in the background. And the first day it was a little bit too noisy. But I think, they sorted that very, very quickly. And it was nice. You kind of had that tournament feel as a viewer as well, instead of only hearing the one table. And I thought a lot of the stuff they did was great. And I got to say, I give feedback. I post stuff on the Matchroom Pool Forum. It's not all of it's positive. Not all of it's negative either, but it's because I care. And I've only got positive things to say in general about this event. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was really, really good.
Rob, our pool playing person that hates pool.
Jim, yeah. Well, I hate paying to watch it. Okay. And I have to say, I'd do it again. I'd pay for it again. Especially, like Jim said, the venue, it took American pool playing and upgraded it to a classier type of an environment. And I really liked the camera work. I thought some of the shots, some of the close-ups and things like that, where you could see the reflection of the lights over the table on the balls as they all lined up in the rack. And those kinds of close-ups, that brought that game right into your home, right straight up front to you. And I really liked that. That turned me on. It got my blood running a little bit. And I certainly love the races as the tournament progresses, getting longer. Those matches getting more tense. And that also, those longer matches, that gets that nerve factor in the game up a notch also, I think. So I love that. I was confused by the top or the final 32 now all of a sudden not having the pattern rack.
I think that was the final 16.
They just racked them by hand.
Was that the final 16?
Yeah, from 16. From 16.
Yeah, the final 16, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, whatever it was, personally, I would have been really bothered by that if I was in that tournament and one of those players. I would have went, what is that all about? I can have that machine rack, the plastic rack, racked exactly the same. And there were comments made by the commentators about that. Like, all of a sudden we're seeing racks that are messier now. We're seeing racks that are going longer. We're seeing more safety
play. Not going every time.
Well, that's great. I mean, I personally love that.
I would
rather watch that than somebody run every single rack.
I mean, I've spoken to a couple of players, and my understanding of the situation was that this was communicated to the players beforehand, that from 16 down to the finals, they would do referee racking. The problem was they didn't have enough referees for the entire tournament to do it on every single round.
That makes sense.
So they decided to use the magic rack.
I understand.
And I don't really have an issue with it based on the fact that the players knew beforehand. Where I do have a slight issue was that every single rack that we were watching, the 9 ball was floating down to the bottom rail. It was either being left as a combination and there were early racks getting finished. I don't mind messy racks and I don't mind seeing the safety, but the 9 ball was almost taken out of the game completely because it was either leaving a combi for early racks or once you got to the 8 ball, the rack was over because you had the 9 sitting in one of the easiest spots on the table to get position on. So there was no chance you were overrunning. You weren't seeing those. Sometimes a player will overrun their position on the 9 and they'll just come a little bit 50-50 for the center pocket or the corner pocket. And these are that's when the twitch comes into a player's arm. That's when they start thinking, ooh, this is a bit. And then you see these missed 9 balls sometimes. You get the Paggy Lyon situation against Jason Shaw in the Masters, you saw Al Shaheem missing one against Chris Melling in the last 32.
Yeah, we got to talk about that at some point in time too.
But that was taken out of it completely because it was all about getting to the 8 ball, and from the 8 to the 9 was simple every time. Or you were getting an early rack and there was a three ball or a four ball floating down beside the nine every single time, and you were having an early combination. That was a little bit frustrating to see. It's something that's very, very easy to sort. All you need to do is just tap the back ball, and they're going to sit. You know, if a referee is in there and he knows what he's doing, they can get that sorted out very, very quickly. So that was, I wasn't so happy about that. The changing of it and making it a wooden rack. But yeah, okay, we know a brand new cloth, a brand new ball, sometimes it's very difficult to get them tight. And if it's those two balls that are behind the nine that are not getting tight, then you're going to get that nine ball floating down to the bottom rail. And I didn't really like to see that.
Yeah, and we'll get
100%, Jim.
Yeah, and we'll get into the. I guess you always got to nitpick, right? I mean, we're pool players; we always have to whine about everything that we possibly can. But
of course,
it's like our job. But I guess my overall thoughts on the event, and I'm going to take it from a little bit different angle. They're doing everything that they need to do in the industry to start building profiles for the players, which makes me, as a marketing person, I guess in this industry, it makes me very happy because at the end of the day, you know. It's not the action that brings the casual viewer. It's the stories. It's the redemption for Alex Kazakis. It's will Shane ever get a world title? It's all these different storylines that exist only if you know that they exist. If the casual fan comes in and sees what happens to Alex Kazakis last year, they're probably going to hang around to watch just because that's such an amazing story. The fact that he loses in the finals and comes back and whitewashes maybe the greatest pool player to whoever touched a pool cue. I mean, that's a really interesting, cool story that only exists if the story is told. And what we saw with the matchroom in between racks, coming in and out of breaks during that dead time of having the rack the balls, they did a phenomenal job of bringing in players to talk about their stories, talking about the players with questions that were actually in the match that were what's happening and going on, plus talking about all the stuff that was going on the side tables and who those players were. I thought that the side view of... and we already kind of mentioned it, Omar and the Chris Melling match, when Omar's up, 10-9, and he literally misses a dead straight in nine ball for the win. And then Chris Melling dogs the four ball in the very next match. I mean, they followed that match. They held up the main table, which, you know, you can start questioning is, should they be doing that so that you could have the shine on the side tables? But regardless, they did it, and it made for a really, really interesting story. And I think that they're really doing a great job as far as building the player profiles and building these stories that people want to pay attention to and want to follow along with. I think that's the next step to really starting to brand the game and build the game is to create a connection to the players now that they're actually getting the players out there in front of everybody's eyes.
I completely agree. And I think, it's good. It's good media experience as well for the players. You know, if they want to be superstars, if they want to be professional sportsmen, they're going to have to get used to being in front of the cameras, talking properly. You know, I've said it for a long time. I think, you know, we've got a great sport here, but the players have to realize that it's also their responsibility. If they want something better for themselves, they've got to work for it as well. It's not just about what they do on the table. They've got to put themselves out there and they've got to help to promote the sport. So I think all the media experience that they got, you know, and also getting in the commentary box, I thought it was fantastic when we talked about that Chris Melling against Omar. Fantastic that it was Jason Shaw was in the commentary at the time, because he was going crazy. He was going absolutely crazy watching that table, watching the Chris Melling match. And the other guys are trying to focus on the main table, and Jason Shaw
just refusing.
Chris missed the food.
Yeah, no, he's completely so uninterested funny. In what's going on the TV. It's like, oh, you're not going to believe what's going on over there. And it was excellent. It was great.
It was Carl and Alex.
Great television. Right? Yeah, it was great television. I really enjoyed it. I thought the commentary teams they did a great job. I like Alex Lely. I mean, I'm a little bit biased for Alex.
You know, I love Alex. Yeah.
But I like him in the commentary there. And Carl Boyce is just getting better and better every single tournament. You know,
I think there's a couple commentators that I could say never bring them back. I mean, if you have to like sit in the background and have to be basically prodded into talking about once every rack, you shouldn't be in the comms box. You can just tell they don't feel comfortable with it. I mean, you might get more comfortable, but there's a lot of players that just kind of sit there and do nothing.
But again, they need help. They need help with the media side of it. And that is all part of it. You know, they need help with putting themselves out there and knowing how to act and react on camera when they're being interviewed. I mean, I remember Andy Murray when he was coming through the tennis. they couldn't get an interview out of him. He just sat there, and all the answers to all his questions were yes, no. You know, they were having to drag information out of him, and it took him a long, long time. You know, he was very quickly one of the top stars in the tennis game, but it took a long time before anyone could do anything with him in a media sense, you know. And pool players, there'll be some pool players that are the same, you know, and they're maybe not so comfortable talking and being in there. You've got other ones that you know, once they start, they're going to stop.
Roy did a nice little dance
Gomez,
at one time.
Roberto Gomez was just, he just kept going and laughing and joking. And you couldn't shut up.
And Naoki Oi doing whatever the heck he did.
Yeah. Wasn't that something?
Yeah.
That was so cool.
So
I think you're right, Nate, though. You gotta have guys, for better or worse, whether you hate them or you love them, have that emotion tied to the players. You have to.
Yeah.
Americans want to watch Federer lose. The eyes will tune in to go and watch it the same way they'll go and tune in to watch Shane go and succeed. And it's like it's the Mayweather effect, right? People hate Mayweather, but they'll buy the pay-per-views in numbers to go and hope that the guy goes and loses. And you got to have personality. Everything you guys said was just absolutely rock solid. Some of these side table matches end up being so amazing. I don't know if you guys remember the international 2 years ago, but when Lechner was up, I think it was like 9-0 on Shane, and then it ends up going hill. And I mean, everybody, even in the arena, people were talking about it and getting messages from friends of mine who were there. I mean, the crowd was just nuts in that area. So I love I love more cameras out there. I love getting pros' perspective on things. As long as they have personality, like Fedor, as much as I love him, the kid's tough to go and listen to in there sometimes, you know.
I'm telling you what, though,
Jason.
Fedor knows his pool, man. He was calling shots like crazy. Yeah, I mean that dude is a savant.
It goes back to what Jim said. They need help on the media side of things to help bring out their personality and how they deliver it, their approach, all these things to get more comfortable. To where fans will go and root for the guy, you know, which Americans all, you know, do with Fedor already.
I got two things to ask you guys too.
Go on.
Oh, one is in the finals, I believe the score was 12-9 and there was a push out. I think Alvin Cueball's up the table.
Yep.
And,
Alvin pushed
and
out.
Omar chose to try to pocket that one ball.
And he was.
What do you think about that? I mean, what?
I personally think he's gone to the table, and he knows that basically he has to keep Alvin in his chair if he wants to win that match. He needs four racks in a row. He's 12-9 down. Alvin's on the hill. Alvin's left him a shot. Now he's probably thinking to himself, if I make this, maybe I can run four. You know, I'll take my opportunity. I've got an open shot. It was a tough shot, but he's thinking, if I try and resave and Alvin comes to the table and finishes this match, am I going to think that might have been my chance? I mean, it was a long shot for him to run four racks from there. But I think he's been in his seat for five games. I think he was nine.
The match before he was, the very game before, Alvin played another push out because he got hooked on the four ball again. And Omar
and
gave it back to him.
Yeah.
Omar gave it back and Alvin ran out from
that
there.
Played a role.
Yeah. So I think
that was 100% on his mind whenever he went to that nine.
I think
that's what I was going to say. Is
I thought a save there was the best play because it was a really good save.
He could have rolled off that one and ended up on that top rail and banked the one ball back down table, you know, by where the nine ball was at. I couldn't believe he attacked it. I think it was just the moment. I mean, Omar he's never been on that stage. He's never felt that pressure. You know, he's never been on a match in Marina before.
He did rattle
like
a couple shots that were, you know, six inches out of the pocket, and you rattled them out.
It's what Mike says. You know, he's not been there before. You saw it in the semifinal. I thought at the beginning of the semifinal, he was way overexcited. He was, you know, he's rushing around the table. He's not. It didn't even look like he was breathing a lot of the time. You know, and then if you don't go off a good start,
Max had that same effect.
Yeah, Max did just exactly the same. You know, these players are top class players.
How about
Max's in that position? Yeah, things happen. Yeah.
Hitting, how about Max He makes like three or four balls on the break and goes to grab the chalk and knocks it on the table and hits the three.
Oh, my God.
Ball.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
What was happening to Max Leshner in that
How
match?
How can that even happen?
But there's nothing to come. There's nothing to prepare you for what Matchroom does. There's nothing. There's no turn. I don't care if you talk about Derby. I don't care if you talk about the International. I don't care if you talk about the Kremlin Cup. Nothing is going to go and get you ready for what they go and put you in for situation. Nothing will. And no matter how experienced you are, even Shane, whenever Shane had his moments against Alex, and he did have moments early on in that match, Shane, you even heard him mumbling to himself, I'm scared. It's not being, and that's because he has experience there for over a decade now, you know. Yeah. So when you put guys like Omar and Max who don't have any experience, it's tough to go and ask.
Absolutely.
And they're late in the tournament, and you know, for Omar and also for Oliver to be playing the semi-final and that be the first match in that arena table. I mean, that's just great. That's so tough because that table does play different to the rest. It's not played on as much.
It's still slidey. It was still slidey. Yeah.
It's warm. Yeah. It's warmer there. The cushions were a bit spongier. And then you're told, right, there you go, play on that table for the first time. And it's the semi-final of the World Championships. Wow. I mean, come on. That's.
Yeah.
Well, that match was a coin flip right from the start. It was going to be whoever.
The camera work really gave you a good idea of exactly where these players were hitting the cue ball, also. And a lot of times you can't see that. When you watch it on TV or whatever, they did perfect on that. And you could see also what I like to look at players' eyes when they're firing, you know, the last stroke, the last half stroke, whatever. What are their eyes doing? Are their eyes going back and forth? What are they doing? And I did notice on a few of these top-notch players, they look at the cue ball last. I know three cushion billiard players always look at the cue ball last, never look at the object ball. Well, I did see that in some of these pocket pool players too. They weren't looking at the object ball. The last thing they were doing, they were looking back at the cue ball. That's kind of cool to pick up on that and see that close up like that.
Yeah, with the camera work, to be able to.
Certainly the, you know, what did I see? What player was it that he seems to, every cut to the right, he'll give the cue ball a little inside English. And every cut to the left, he'll give it a little inside English too. Well, it was one of the semi-final players. Oh, I can't remember who right now, but
you really pick up on little nuggets like that.
Yeah, but it's
if you remember whenever Billy was in the box with Shane's match, and they showed Shane looking at the spot on the rail of where he wanted to go and be at as he's following through on the break. That was some, and I've seen Shane play a lot. I mean, I've seen him play a lot of pool, and I've never noticed that before. No. Picking up on little nuggets like that are just great as a fan of the game and a student of the game.
Yeah.
And if he's feeling a little bit under pressure before in his pre-shot routine, he'll look away somewhere else, away, and then reset his mind, and then back to the shot kind of thing, which is obviously and something he practices focused as well. Exactly, and it's. I mean, these are just little things that probably everybody knows about this now. So everybody at home that's practicing now is looking away to the wall and then looking back to the table or looking at the third diamond on the rail when they're breaking. I'm thinking, this is the secret.
Well, it's about, I'm going to be. How many amateur players started doing this on their backswing, you know, watching Shane and wreck their games totally because they can't do it.
Dropping that.
Talk about that.
I'm going to be making six balls in the break now because I look at the third diamond.
Actually, I got yelled at by Jerry Bricep this weekend because I do that on my jump shots. I jump the same way as Shane does. I have that elbow drop.
No, you don't. No, you don't, Nate.
Nate had said something earlier that I want to just reiterate, and it's so important that these guys got to have personality, the media experience. They got to have a social media presence. They got to go and they're not just going to get handed an opportunity to go and play on TV tables. You got to be exciting to watch. You got to be clean cut, good looking, whatever your hair is. You got to touch all these bases to go and get there. And you got to play world class too, you know? And when you're there, you definitely have to take advantage of the moment. And Albin's one of those guys that does that.
Whenever the moment gets tight.
Yeah, well, no, but I mean, like he touches all those bases and he plays world class. He's super clutch, right? He even though he's emotional, he can still handle big situations. It's
he deserved I'm that really, win.
He did.
And,
it's
amazing how Albin has changed his mental side of his game. Because when he was younger, he was a hothead. He was throwing cues around. Yeah. He was smashing cues. He was getting angry with everybody. He'd miss a ball and the whole world was against him. The cues were getting thrown around. Chalk getting thrown into the corner. He was a complete hothead when he was a kid. And all of a sudden, something just changed. I'm not sure if somebody spoke to him or if he just decided himself. And now he's just emotionless. You know, he's a little bit upset if one of his eyebrows goes up in the air, kind of thing.
He looks
you know,
disgusted it's just, all the time.
But I think that's
go watch him on a side table.
yeah, okay.
When he's down the TV table, go watch him because he'll be there. And you can see him. You can see him there going spitting out those four letter words on the side table. But yeah, on the TV table though, he's a consummate professional. You know, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't mind seeing these guys get angry when they miss a ball. We get like that, right? We get frustrated with ourselves. So I love seeing that within reason. And Albin has that perfect balance of it. You know,
he stepped over the line a few times during the CLP, but he also made a post and said he did and apologized for it. So,
yeah,
you know, I agree. So let's transition now to what were some of the biggest surprises of this event? I guess I can start it off. I mean, this, Oliver Slonaki, right?
Snolgoki. Snolgoki.
Slonaki? Yeah, close enough. Where the heck did this kid come from? Are you kidding me? This is the problem that the U.S. is in. Of course, this is an American podcast. This is where we're at in trouble.
You think so?
This dude can go make it to the semifinals. Nobody in the U.S. has ever heard of him. And he's beaten, let's see here, he beats Francisco Sanchez Ruiz, Shane Van Boning. Yeah, Francisco Sanchez Ruiz twice. Shane Van Boning, Wojtek Szewczyk. This dude is, who is he? And even Danielle Corrieri. That dude's a great player.
Italian.
I mean,
shall I make you feel even worse and tell you exactly who he is?
Sure.
He is
basically just one of many, many, many young players coming out of Europe.
That's what I'm saying.
He's not a special one.
No.
He's done something special this week, but he's one of many, many Europeans. Youth at the moment.
It is just crazy.
It is
the
insane.
Kid Moritz. He should have smoked Jason.
Yeah.
You know, Europe's just so deep. But you know, I said this the other day. It's also a testament to, I think, some of these bigger names, like in the last year, I don't know if maybe they just weren't putting in the work, but you can tell some of these other guys have been putting in the work.
The young, younger people who don't
their
need
heels
that.
When it comes when it that they're coming for them. They're coming for them 100%, and I'm excited. I love seeing kids like this, but you got to go and finish the job, right? You got to go and deliver. But it was a hell of a story though, you know, and I hope that he goes and learns a lot from it.
This will do him the world of good. This is put him out there kind of thing, you know.
It was Shane's event to lose. I mean, everybody was promoting it as Shane's to lose, especially on that side of the bracket. So to be the one to go and spoil it and not have that let down the next match because he did follow up and win his next match, fantastic. You know, my hat's off.
You know the biggest thing for me watching that kid there playing, when he beat Shane, it was almost as if, yeah, okay, but that's what I'm here to do. You know, there wasn't the
business as usual. And like he never said, looked like the moment was too big.
Exactly. With a lot of other players, they do that. They beat one of the big guys, and like Mike said, they go to the next match and they feel as if they've achieved as much as they can achieve by beating somebody like Shane, and in the next match, they're easy pickings.
Now it's time to show them their belly.
All right, now, yeah, exactly. Now I've got another match. I'll go and do the same again. And again, when he beat Sanchez Ruiz, it was just like, okay, yeah, fine. Now I'm in the semi-final. And it's just the way he just went through that thing, looking as if he just belonged there kind of thing, you know?
The way that he beat Francisco
was going to be great for him.
Yeah. The way he beat Francisco, too, was like a pretty – that's a lot of hard. He was up like 7-2 or something like that, and Francisco gets it all the way back to 9-9.
Yeah,
and Oliver wins the next two racks. I mean, that's a champion. That's a champion move right there. That's not something somebody who's 20 years old and you know has the heart of a gerbil. And that's a heart of a lion. That kid's. I mean, I know you were. I'll just sell you out. Jim, you said, God, I hope somebody beats this kid. I do not want him on the Moscone Cup team. That's the cojones.
Hey, listen, Matchum didn't want him on, to go and win that final either, buddy. Let me tell you.
Can I just clarify? I did not say I don't want him on the Moscone Cup team. I said I don't think he's ready to be on a Moscone Cup team.
Same thing.
But there's a load of kids out there, and he's going to be one of many that are going to be fighting for those Moscone Cup spots, you know? And
I think it's a lot wider open than what it was before. Filler didn't look like Filler. Shaw didn't look like Shaw to me.
I don't think Jason's looked like Jason for a while.
No, yeah.
Jason hasn't looked like Jason since he got his business.
Yeah.
Kazakis is stepping up his game, and now the monkey's off his back. He finally wins a big one, you know, and Albin, he's already done locked up his spot. So
yeah.
I think it's wide open. And even Fedor on the Matchroom stage can kind of be, you know, a little inconsistent at times, but Federer hasn't
performed yet on the Matchroom. He hasn't gone deep in any of the Matchroom events, really.
Right.
I mean, he's too good not to at some stage. It will happen, you know. But
if you're looking for players, if you're Alex Leigh and your car boys,
and you're looking for players who are proven winners on that Matchroom table, then Federer's not really there. You know, if you're purely basing it on who are proven winners in the Matchroom arena, Federer's not there yet, really.
I think he got the semis near the Alex. I don't count
what happened last year at the Moscone Cup as getting experience, though. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, because there was no fans last year at the Moscone. So, I mean, that's a whole different, you know, it's not the same.
Yep. I know. I said that with Chris Robinson. I thought performed very well at the Moscone Cup last year. He was one of the few Americans that actually reached the level you would expect him to reach. You know, for the Fargo he's got and the experience he's got. But he hasn't done it in front of us. You know, he hasn't done it in front of me and Cookie and, you know, the rest of the idiots in the European crowd. And until you've done
fire
that,
under
exactly, you haven't performed on the Moscone stage unless you've done it in front of us. So, I mean, I'd be interested to see. I don't know what Jeremy and Shane are thinking for it, but yeah.
This is what gets me excited over, like, before COVID, and hearing all the stuff Matchroom had cooking, right? I want to see it with fans in there. I want to see the U.S. Open with fans. I want to see the World Championships with fans in there, because that buzz and that excitement, it was great already with just having the tables in the room, but I can't wait till next year. I can't wait till that thing is jam-packed.
I will say one thing about the fans, that I did not like the fans during the finals there, because they were completely biased to one side, and there was one point where John actually had to like silence the crowd because they were screaming Albin right on Omar's break. I mean, I don't like that for a world championship finals. I don't like that you have, I love it. I like it up until when it's Omar's inning. If it's Omar's inning at the table, I just don't like that for a world championship. I don't like that level of disrespect towards the other player.
Listen, when Ronnie O'Sullivan is playing, it doesn't matter who he's playing. When Ronnie O'Sullivan is playing in the World Championship final, the other guy gets no love.
I'm not arguing. I'm just saying,
you know?
I don't like
it. And that's snooker. And that's snooker, you know?
I'm not arguing. I'm just saying I don't like
just,
it.
Just let me say one thing. We're talking about, you know, getting fans back in. I think we've got to give top marks to Matchroom, to Emily, to Nick Teal and the team, that they're actually building a brand during a pandemic when they can only really be losing money. I can't imagine they're making much money out of this. Yep. And they're building and putting more tournaments on. So I really hope it becomes a success, because without the money that, can you imagine if there was 200 fans a day at $50 a fan, you're talking about 60 grand, you know, that would easily have been put in the pockets there, added to the prize fund or, you know, to cover all the costs and stuff like that they're not getting, you know? So, for them to be doing this and for them to actually be building their brand and putting on even more tournaments, you know, doubling the output that they had with very little income other than sponsorship, I think that's massive. I think they've got to be praised for that. And because there's not going to be many companies that are expanding in these circumstances, and they're doing it, you know. So, you know, like Mike said, when the fans are back in there, it's going to be great.
I think they're smart, though, because they're also, they're like having somebody like Carl do multiple things, announcing Shane as being the vice captain. They're cutting corners, I think, where they need to. And it's smart, you know. It's a very bright move.
Like, what's the backstory with that, Mike? Why isn't Joey back?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything about it, and I usually do ahead of time. That was brand new to me.
I didn't hear anything about
my
it.
My only thinking is just what I said. I mean, that's the first thing that came to my mind was that why are they going to go and pay somebody else to do something that they can go and have Shane go and do, you know, dual roles, you know?
This is my conspiracy theory, and I have no idea if this is true or not. Like, I don't even have a tip. This is just, like, my guess is I bet Shane wanted that role. I think Shane wants more control over the team after what happened last year.
He's never.
I don't think so either. No.
Maybe.
That rah 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 kind of guy, you know.
No, I'm not
he's
saying
he's been the one like at boot camps, like on the side working on his own and not working with the team. So to me, it's been.
I'm not saying
the opposite. Like when it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying he wants the role as in like he's ready to step up and be a coach. I think he wants the role because he's sick of the team that's getting put out there, and he wants more of saying that. And I think you guys can all read between the lines and what that actually means. I think he wants more say on who's actually on the team. Because at the end of the day, like we're getting down, like Jim, you said this multiple times, we're getting down to the point where we're getting players on the team that are your level.
Yep.
Right. Your Fargo is right around where Chris Robinson is. And if we drop any further, I mean, who we're going to start getting into my range. Am I going to be a player in this? I think Shane wants to actually, Shane knows, Shane's been there, done that. He's been on this stage. He knows what it takes to compete with Team Europe, if we can compete with Team Europe. And I think he wants a little bit more say on how to build that team. Just a guess.
Do you think Jeremy Soucy did enough to get himself in the mix to be talked about?
Good showing.
I don't think so.
No, not enough to get talked about.
Maybe talked about, but
I was impressed with Jeremy.
I don't think he'll make
to get talked about. At least to be in the conversation. I mean, hell, Bergman won't even travel. You know, Jeremy's over there, one of the dead money, and he shows up. And
I think he had a lot of heart.
His break was incredible, and of a world championship before. So I don't think he played up to, you know, his potential either. But I think Jeremy played great. I mean, hell, he got deeper than Tyler. He got deeper than Chris. You at least got to go and give the kid a look, I think.
Yep.
Yeah,
I can agree with that. I can certainly agree with
that. Bring him into a boot camp.
He impressed me. His nerves impressed me, and his style impressed me. His cue ball control. There wasn't anything about his game, his position play. It was spot on.
But at the end of the day, who got further than him? Sky. That was it.
Yeah.
Sky's the only one that got further than him.
And you know? Sky's on the team every year.
Well, Sky's guaranteed. You know. Yeah.
Right. Well, okay. He's still high. I played great against Dennis, and he's still pumped about that. He played good.
Yeah.
I like this play.
So my big surprise for this was Oliver. What's your big surprise, Jim?
My big surprise for the tournament, Darren Appleton
getting knocked out so early.
No, I think
making it as far as he did.
No, the way he played.
Oh.
And he was only really one ball, just one bad shot away from putting some real, real pressure on Filler. And I think he's, you know, maybe surprised.
He plays Filler really well, though. He always does.
He's smart,
He played Filler well. I think it was the international win. I don't know if it was Hill Hill or he won Hill Hill, but. Some guys just match up well with each other. Like Dennis Gregg plays Kachi really well, you know, all the time in tournaments. Dennis has always beaten him. You know, some guys match up well with one another.
Dan's on Facebook all the time, you know, oh, I'm out fishing again or blah, 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 blah. Not really, you know, he puts the occasional YouTube video out with a drill, but you could tell, by the way his head was over the queue that he's been working hard. He's been working really hard because one thing I noticed about him, the last year or so, if you look at photographs of him playing in tournaments over the last year compared to 2-3 years ago, you can see his head's completely twisted. He's not got his chin, he's not got his cue in the middle of the cue in the middle of his chin. He's twisted to the side. Now if you look at him during the matches there, especially the when he was on table two. Another great thing from Matchroom, by the way, extending it to table two on YouTube to get more action out there. Very good idea. But if you look at him that match and look at photographs that have been made of him during the tournament, his head is completely square again. And when Darren Appleton's got his technique and his fundamentals back online again, then it all comes back very, very quickly. So he's been working hard, I think. And he's still got life left in Appleton. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes deep in some big tournaments.
Early 40s, right?
Yeah, but he gives off that impression that it's, I'm one of the old guys and it's kind of finished now. But he's been given that spark again, I think. He's been given that spark again, yeah. Getting to the World Cup of Pool. Yeah. Looked like he played okay there. He was playing all right with boys. If you look at him, look at photographs from the World Championships there, and you see him, he looks like the old Darren Appleton over his cue. And that was big for me, because I've seen him play. I've played against him since he had some little neck issues. And it just, he looked lost, you know, and it was his head position. And he knows it himself and his feet. But he's got that back in line now. So more tournaments, and I expect Darren Appleton to be firing on all cylinders again next year.
Yep. Rob, what you got?
What was the question again?
What was your biggest surprise of the event?
My mind went crazy when Jim was talking.
What was your biggest surprise of the event?
Oh, Shane losing. Really?
In the way that he did?
Yeah, that just kind of totally surprised me.
I got a question. If they're still using the template, does Shane lose that match, Yank?
No.
I don't think he loses.
No, 100%. There you go. I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I think he snaps the event off.
And as a player, I think that you got to eat that somehow.
I think Shane knows the rack more than anybody else in the world.
You know what's coming, but because it happened, there's nothing you can do about it.
I think Shane knows the rack better than anybody else in the world, that he can look at a table for 5 minutes and see how it plays and know exactly how to maximize the break for it with the template.
And he developed that kind of new break, drawing it into the side rail and into the top side of the middle pocket. He scratched once, I think, while he was doing it, which is a kind of a dangerous break.
But Neil's kind of ripped on for it.
He was getting real good position on the one a lot of the time. But that break's not going to work when you've got a hand rack, you know. So if you look at Alban was breaking the same the entire tournament, you know, and getting just as much love off both sets of them. And he wasn't having to change his break. So I think Shane's gone in there, into that match. He's had to change some stuff in his break, and it's not worked out for him, you know. And it's difficult to say. I don't know how many. I didn't see the match. It's difficult to say how many balls he just dogged or missed or whatever.
I heard he broke six times and was dry four.
Yeah,
three see, or four,
that's,
yeah.
I think, you take the whole winter break out of that for Shane, and that's one of his big advantages, getting himself on a roll. And that winter break, and you see, he was putting four and five packs together beforehand when he was getting a consistent break. Without the consistent break, it becomes a bit of a battle, and it's an evener, you know.
That kid has heart. There ain't no two ways about it. That kid has a lot of heart. He had he was dead walking into that arena, and he showed the whole world that he can go and play. I think the break is huge in pool, and we all know, it's the most important shot in the game, you know. But they said they were told ahead of time, so there ain't no excuses. And like Jim said, Albin had a very consistent break. I noticed that right away. He wasn't getting love after the break sometimes, but that one ball was going towards the
it's
same area.
It's amazing how many times a four ball hooked him.
Yeah, he was swatting the rock.
He was parking that cue ball really well. Yeah, he never looked like scratching. You know, okay, he had a couple of times, but most of the time that cue ball was stopping in the middle. It wasn't getting kicked around. So he had that under control nicely.
So Mike, what was your biggest surprise?
I didn't know that they were going to go to a triangle rack, so that to me was was the biggest surprise. It affects it so much. I don't like that being changed in the middle of an event. But I'm not gonna complain about Matchroom, because if they knew about it, then that's all that matters. That period, end of story. You know, if the players knew ahead of time, then you got to go and be prepared. And Albin definitely was. Sky's great with the wood rack as well. And he adjusted very well. But for me, it was that move. And the way the table kind of played on the TV was a little tough.
Yep. I would, but, like, tough before, to watch, I mean. Yeah. Before we move on to the criticisms, I do have one other thing that I kind of thought was a surprise, that it's crazy for a world championship, the final six, we'll say the final 16, but really, I mean, like the final eight. I mean, Francisco Sanchez Ruiz, I mean, he's a great player, don't get me wrong. You know, are we really going to say that he's like a top 16 in the world? Maybe in this field he is. Max Leshner, I think, is a little bit of a surprise. David Al-Kaidi is a little bit of a surprise. But then you have, you know, other players in here that – where were all the big guys? Where were all the huge
that's
players?
That's nine ball, though. Nine ball. I mean, yeah. anything can happen in nine ball.
Across the entire field. It was just
you
crazy.
Can't really call,
all
you,
of the
you can't
big,
really call
big players.
Al-Qaeda, you can't call a surprise. He's a two-time Masters champion. He's proven it on the matchroom table.
Ruiz can get big names on his belt. Ruiz can go and slay the Cole brothers. I've seen it at the International before. He can go and take down some Asian players too. So he can go and get there. But there's a difference between going deep and winning. There's a huge difference, you know. Ask Kazakis.
Yeah, right. I guess mostly the bottom side of the bracket. It's just crazy to see some of these names. Like, I know who Omar Al-Shaheen is. He's been a great player for 5, 6, 7 years now. But I would say the average pool player has no idea who he is. Same with Oliver. I mean, there's a couple of other players like the Tomas Kaplan. I mean, if you're a regular pool player, you might know who he is, but not well. Dimitri Yungo. I mean, Nick Economopoulos. I mean, probably know who he is at this point, but there's a lot of players on that bottom side of the bracket that are just like, whoo, they make
okay, great runs. Yeah, but but that's it. They all got a lot of players got helped out by the fact that some of the big names ended up in the losers.
Jason
side.
And Shane,
you
against
know?
Each other.
Jason,
Filler
Jason and you know, Jason ended up in the losers bracket. Filler ended up in the losers bracket. They're all coming back, and they're going into parts of the draw, and you're thinking, oh my god, I've done well here. I've gone 2 for 2. I've got myself into the last 64, and then I get one of these guys in there. You're not really expecting that, you know. And the top half of the draw did end up getting a little bit loaded, apart from perhaps Shane.
Well,
but that's the way it goes with a random draw. You
on
know?
The bottom,
and,
on the bottom side, there's an
random
eight.
Draw.
Yeah.
Ooh, controversial.
And the bottom side, on the bottom side of the bracket, for like an 8-person stretch, I mean, you had Alex Kazakis, Naoki Oi, Josh Filler, Darren Appleton, Francisco Sanchez Ruiz, and Carl Boyce. I mean, that's a pretty brutal for the bottom side. But for the rest of it, I mean, the rest of the bottom was pretty fluffy.
Yeah, but look, you can only play and beat the guy that's put in front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so those guys got there because they did what they had to for do sure. when they had to do it. You know, and
certainly
you can't take anything away from Omar, anything away from Oliver.
Who was in front of him?
Exactly. The rules were set there. He got put on a table with Shane Van Boning, and it doesn't matter if it's wooden rack or not. You're still the underdog, and he took him out. You know, and he kept it going, You know, and he was looking real comfortable at 6-1 that semi final. But again, nine ball, it can change so quickly, you know. Yeah. And we saw quite a few matches where people were looking comfortable. You know, Albin almost came back from 8-0 down against Gomez. He misses if he makes that six ball, he beats him 9-8, you know.
That's what crazy. Roberto does, though. Let's be real. That's what Roberto does.
Roberto's arm, at some stage, Roberto's arm and shoulder are out in the car park. You know, it's crazy. Yeah.
So I guess there's a couple of big announcements that I want to get out of the way before we talk about the last thing. They have official dates for the Moscone Cup, and it's going to be at Alexandria Palace. They have changed the dates by one day. It was the 6th through the 9th. Now it's the 7th through the 10th in London, so Ali Pally. So they also said the tickets are going to be going on sale very, very soon. So hopefully that's the case. And we actually have dates for the U.S. Open as well. That is going to be September 10th, 11th, 12th, 12th through the 18th. Is that right? I think
13 to 18, maybe.
13 through the 18th. No, I think it's 12 through the 18th. 12 through the 18th.
No, 13.
Okay, 13 through the 18th in Atlantic City. So that's, I think that's the first time location for that event, if I'm not mistaken. Anybody correct me?
No idea. Paras or something like that. But I'm sure it'll be a great event.
I'm sure they'll have the arena looking great. I mean,
I think everybody in the States is probably just happy to hear the announcement that it will be in the States, because There was a whole load of people on Facebook that started claiming that that the US Open was going to get played outside of the States because of the pandemic.
I think Mike's got some news on this.
The whole of Facebook has exploded. Matchroom is stealing the US
Open. I had heard Atlantic City when they were back in Vegas, but I don't know. A lot of American fans aren't too thrilled. I can tell you that.
They'd rather be in Vegas. Yeah.
Well, of course. But Atlantic City has a reputation, you know, in and of itself, and not in a great way. So,
I've seen a couple of people making negative comments, but I haven't really. There's been no meat on the bone. It's just been Atlantic City is rubbish.
I would say
I'm excited though.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I tell you what, I looked at flights today because I'm going to be in BCA PL Nationals or whatever it's going to be, the 1st through the 11th of September in Vegas. And I'm looking at one-way flights from there to Atlanta City, $78.
Woo! Score. Get two of them.
So I think I'm probably gonna go straight from Vegas over to Atlantic City for that and hang around for the US Open.
A couple more years with the podcast, Nate, and you'll be able to have your own plane.
Yeah. Right now I'm working on paying for the fuel charges, but we'll start very soon. Yeah, once Melina Mike jumps on that Patreon with all of his moldy money, yeah, we'll be good to go. Billions a day. Billions, you'll be good. No, all right. So then the last thing that I wanted to talk about, I guess, were there any other big announcements that were made during it that I'm missing? Shane Van Boning being the playing vice captain, I think that's worth highlighting. So he's still playing.
He will be playing.
Yes.
Okay, I'll be up there for Shane and Dennis. I'll be up there in Oklahoma, so I'll talk to Joey. I'll find out what the deal was.
But I thought about sending him a text, that's kind of
a raw deal though. I hope he found out beforehand, because that'd be a terrible way to go and find out. You know?
Yeah.
I have a question. A personal question. Historical playing personal question. Is there any player that you've ever played, professional player in a tournament, that you never want to play again?
Me?
Yeah.
Is there a professional player I've ever played that I never want to play again?
Yeah.
Yes.
And who would that be?
Darren Appleton, because then I keep my 1-0 record.
Appleberry.
If I never play Darren Appleton again, it means I die with a 1-0 winning record against him. I'll take that.
I love seeing Darren back. By the way, Jim, I'm with you. Darren on the matchroom stage and in awesome. Professional pool is incredible. Yeah. I'm a big Darren Appleton fan. That final in 2012 was one of the best finals I've ever seen in my life.
Was just crazy.
Yeah. So I love seeing Darren back. Through and through, bring him as much as Darren as we can get.
All right. So the last
jokes aside, no, there's nobody that I wouldn't like to play. I'd like to play all of them. I'd like to have an opportunity to either beat any of them or get donutted by any of them. I don't really care. I just like playing against the big guys.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. So you've respected every player you've ever played and get along with.
Okay. I've never had any issues with any of them. No, never at all. Okay. Never on the table. No. No, good. At the bar sometimes they don't buy drinks. That's the only thing, you know. So I've got an issue with a lot of these top pros when they go to the bar and they don't buy any drinks. But on the pool table, no issues.
Okay. All right. So the last thing I wanted to talk about is, I guess, the critiques of the World Cup or the World Pool Championships and how they could potentially make it better in the future. The only thing that I would say that I guess I can get it started is I was not a fan that. I guess at the end of the day, of course, you can never have the outside tables working on the same schedule as the inside table, because the inside table has commercial breaks, right? But there was a couple of times where the day ended on the main table and there were still matches going on the outside table and they just cut the broadcast. I didn't like that. I wish that they could have at least one more table set up where they have decent to good cameras. At least good enough to where you could continue the broadcast during the event, so that even if the main event is done, you can still catch the action on the outside tables to kind of keep up to date with what's going on. I think that would be a good touch, but that's just, you know, this is nitpicking stuff at this point, because I thought the event was great. Mike, what you got?
if Kazum can do it, anybody can do it. And I pay money to Kazum, and I love watching Euro Tours, and it's incredible. Now that they have the live scoring, you can get to watch whatever table you want to go and do. And I think that with things getting better, I think that they'll be more open to expanding stuff like that. But I enjoyed the YouTube part of it. Critiques, that table was soft. I don't care what size pocket they said it was. It looked slow. Everybody had trouble with the speed of it. It looks like whatever feedback they got on it wasn't good enough. They need to go back and retweak that thing. And then just that, it did look nice, yeah. But I mean, you saw guys really struggling that don't struggle with speed that were just selling out safes. And you don't go and see stuff like that. I heard from a few players that played on that TV table that it wasn't good. Everything was playing soft. And then just that changing of the rack, that for me was just the biggest letdown of it. I've seen it in the World 10 Ball. I've seen it in the US Open before. You can't play a certain way up until that point and then want to go and change it. Have it be whatever it's going to be from the beginning to end. But yeah. don't go and get there playing it one way. And then once you get there, go and have it be a whole nother game. Because it is. Wood rack 9 ball, wood rack 10 ball is a way different game than playing it with a template.
Bingo. Yeah.
I agree. I don't see any issue with playing with a template the entire tournament. The matches were still exciting. You know, it wasn't like somebody was it was an easy tap break and they were just running rack after rack after rack. It was still exciting. You know, I like the winner break format. I think it works in that situation.
I do like the winner break. I want to see them keep that.
It's growing That's on awesome. Me more and more. Because we saw some real good matches. Watching Albin come back
with the longer race, yeah. It has to be a long. It has to be 9 or above, I think.
Minimum.
And really, it only works on the race to 7, like at the Masters, because they had the 4-inch pockets. You know that.
Yeah.
A little.
I don't want to.
You can have a shorter race if you make the table super tough. You know, but you can't if you can't make a race to 7 on 4.5-inch pockets. You know, that's just.
The wood rack has its benefits. I enjoy seeing moving. I enjoy seeing a good safety battle. I can appreciate that. I don't know. Yeah, I just whatever you want to do at the beginning, have it be throughout, and I'm fine with it. You know,
the thing with a wood rack is the whole thing about a wood rack is the rack is different every time you put it in. You know, so you're going to get gaps in it. But the idea is that there's going to be a gap in a different spot every time. If the gap is in the same spot every time and it's having the same effect on the rack every single time. Then you might as well just use a template rack because it's just as consistent. I hated the 9 ball go down to the rail every time. I absolutely hated it.
And it was there a lot during the final. It was there quite a bit during that racks. Final. I agree with you, Jim. It's got that gap, and I want to see the ref taken out of the game. I don't want to the less of the ref that I go and see, the better for me. I don't want to see guys go and make themselves part of the game. And the rack is just—it's so much easier. Go and put a damn template out there.
And even John Layman, who's probably considered one of the better rackers amongst the players, they enjoy it when he's racking. You know, he gets called Wing Ball John because he does get them quite tight. He couldn't get them tight enough to stop that 9 ball from floating. And if he's not getting them tight enough to stop it, then you've got to do something. You got to do.
And he's training everybody else.
Exactly.
He's training all the rest of them.
You've got to tap one ball just to make sure there's a little bit of mass at the back of the pack, so they all sit in or do something with it. You know, as far as negatives, day one, the background was too loud, but they sorted it very quickly. I'm not sure if it's something that Matchroom noticed themselves or whether they really were following a lot of the discussions on the Matchroom forum. I really like the Matchroom pool forum. I think there's a lot of good discussions there. There's a lot of idiots go on it as well and just bash stuff. But I think it provides Matchroom with some good information. And they sorted it basically straight away on day two. I liked it. I liked it just a little bit of the background noise, but it didn't override the commentary. Other than that, negative stuff.
Live score was really hardly any.
But going back to what you said about Kazum, the problem is that, you know, with the Euro Tour, there's nothing live on television, so nobody's paying any TV rights. As soon as somebody's paying TV rights and you give your audience, their potential audience, a platform to watch something else other than their channel.
Makes sense, Jim.
Then you have a problem. You're going to be very difficult for you to get the big broadcasters on board if you're also given a platform for people to watch something else. You know, they're not going to pay.
I can understand that for sure.
So it's a little bit of a balancing thing. They managed to put one TV on YouTube, which probably took away some of the viewers for Sky Sports or for the other, for the Zone and so. But yeah, as soon as somebody's paying for your product to then offer it out free or offer it through another company, yeah, it becomes a bit of a difficult situation, I think. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Rob, what you got?
Well, I really liked the replay factor. And in pool, you want to see what just happened. And maybe they're not going to actually do that for you live. So you can go ahead and swirl back a half a minute and watch something over. I know I watched a couple combination shot where I thought maybe there was a chance he didn't hit the first ball he was supposed to hit. He just missed it. But I could replay it back like a DVR in your TV. And I like that as a fan, as a paid subscriber to DAZN, to be able to do that in matches and see, okay, I want a better, closer look at this, so I'll just replay it myself.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
The thing I didn't like so much about the whole tournament was, the TV table especially, was the softness of it. I thought that it could have been a tighter table. And of course, with the new cloth, all the tables play, you know, they play goofy a little bit until that gets worn in. And you didn't see that happening on that table. It never did really get worn in. As the cloth gets a little dirtier or whatever, it plays a little better. But I don't remember who shot the shot, but it was a fairly straight in shot, maybe 5-degree angle, but down the rail past the side pocket, he hit the second diamond and that ball went in the corner. And I went, whoa. I mean, because he missed the shot, but it went in. And there was a comment about it at the time too, but they didn't dwell on that. And I thought, you know, for this level of competition, that is a little bit unacceptable to me. That you'd be able to pot a ball, I should say, and hit the second diamond. That should just never happen on a long rail.
Yeah. Well, the players are allowed to practice on the outside tables, but they're not allowed to practice on the arena table. Do you think that it would help then if players were allowed to practice on the arena table to keep the consistency that all tables are played on the same amount, kind of thing? You know, yeah. The table doesn't look dirty, you know. I think they try and preserve the cleanliness of the table and make it look good on TV, but it doesn't really get dirty, you know, unless you're really close up. That table's going to be full of scratches from the tip of the break queue, you know, when these guys are ramming it, you know, you get these zigzag lines down the cloth. You don't really see them. So, I mean, if they were allowed players to practice on the arena table, then it would keep the consistency throughout all the tables. The only difference would be the television lights, which I think, you know, somebody remarked that it's white light that you're playing underneath on the TV table and more of a yellowy light on the outside tables. But the tables generally should kind of play the same if they're played on the same amount of time, you know? So just let players practice on the arena table. I don't know.
Sure. Pretty good answer there.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's not going to work for the Masters because that table just gets set and then boom, if you're on first, you're the first one to hit a shot in it. Yep. You know, but for the world championship.
Yeah, these multi-table events at a
exactly.
Wrinkle.
Yeah.
Same for the US Open. I'm sure it'll be the same for the US Open. But is what it is, right?
Yeah.
It gives a big advantage to people like Shane Van Boning, who gets to play on the TV table quite a bit because he's so popular. You know, he'll get that.
But he earned it, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm not.
The only reason he got a third match is because the draw got him and Shaw together. Him and Shaw would never have played that match. They would have been scheduled for outside tables, but as soon as they get drawn against each other, you got to put them out. You got to put that
Mike,
out.
Mike said
they've had their two matches each. Yeah. You know?
Mike said it perfectly earlier. I mean, you earn your way onto that that TV table either by being, you know, naturally good looking, fit. You have a great social media following. Whatever it is, you need to be popular enough to justify. Or if you're Nayuki Oi, to be a clown, right? The point is you have to earn your way onto that TV table. And Shane's a legend. I mean, he's Captain America. He is probably maybe the greatest pool player.
He's probably got less personality than anybody.
Yeah, but he's the legend.
If you look at Shane, yeah, for sure, yeah.
That's I'm just going like, to play he, my he, game. He, I'm going to hope the break
he's
works
the exception.
Out well.
if Shane came out like today, Shane would never get him a TV table. But no. Shane is Shane, so he's always going to get
But he is charming for being so quiet. But yeah, it's I mean, you earn your way there. I think Mike said it perfectly earlier. Shane has earned his way onto that table. So, well, I think that's that pretty much wraps up our discussion. I know Jim's probably starving to death over there waiting to get some food.
I got a phone call. Jim,
we're just going to mute him for right now. So I guess, is there anything else you guys want to close out with?
No, Albin's a monster. To have the consistency that he's had, he's been to 2 world championship finals. Well, he's been to 3. He's won 2 in the last 10 years. Some people just find a way to win. And Albin's just got that DNA. He's got that in his blood. It may not always be the prettiest at times, but congratulations. That was a hell of a ride. To beating Sky the way he did, that was the final
Sky
for me.
Sky couldn't buy a role in that match.
No, but at the same time, I mean, listen, he made a jump to go and put Sky away, you know, and that was a big moment in there.
Sky missed the two ball.
I mean, you got to – big players just – they get it. Like, whenever Omar let Albin back in, you just knew it. And even the commentator said it. Like, okay, he's weathered that middle part of the match storm, and now Albin's going to go close out. And Albin does what champions do. And certain people just have it. Once you get a moment, you just are cutthroat, and you go for the blood, you know. Yeah. And he did.
I mean, they said it during the commentary. I think Omar missed a shot, and Carl Boyce turned around and said, "Well, I wonder how expensive that'll be." And Alex Lely said straight away, 3 racks.
Yeah,
3. That mistake will cost him 3 racks, and that's exactly what you expect from Albin. It's not just going to cost you that rack. Albin's going to say, "Right, I'm going to be here for 20 minutes."
I was getting 3 games. I was getting 3 games, and it's 9-9. And I messaged, and the guy messaged me. He's like, "Send me over your payment information." And I said, "Wait a minute, Albin can run out from here. Like, did you not watch the beginning of it? Albin can go and get out from there." And of course, he never got to 10, which was heartbreaking for me. But you know, it's part of pool, and it's part of 9 ball, and Albin just sealed the deal, man. So he's just got a winning pedigree, whether it's the World Cup, Championship League pool. I mean, just you name it.
Moscone Cup.
He's Moscone Cup. He comes with big shots. I mean, he just has it, man.
The moment is never too big for him.
Yeah. He's a big moment player. And the bigger the moment, the more chance he's going to take it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not been overly successful on the Euro Tours. He's always pretty deep. He's pretty consistent on the Euro Tours. But it's not like he's got 20 Euro Tour.
I think Lechner's been better on Euro Tour than Albin has been.
You put Albin on that center stage, big time match.
Bingo.
He's going to knock you out. He's going to knock you clean out.
No doubt, Jim.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to hopefully have Albin on in the next week or so. So you'll get to hear from the champion himself. But we're also going to be getting Chris Reinhold on for the on the podcast soon to talk about his name change. And we're also going to be bringing on Alex Kazakis. So big slate of guests coming up on the podcast in the next, hopefully, week or two. Hopefully sooner than 2 weeks. But
can I go and have my dinner now? It's getting cold.
Yeah, get away from me, Jim. Thanks for joining, buddy.
Guys, it's been a joy. Thanks very much. Mike, take it easy. Speak to you soon.
Appreciate it, Jim.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Rob.
Nice too.
I suppose the rest of us can probably tune off as well. Mike, thanks for joining us today. Jim, thanks again. And Rob, as always, buddy, thanks.
Appreciate it, fellas.
Okay. See you, Mike.
All right. See you later, everyone.
Adios.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.